Psycho Man.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to episode 446 of the Motorcycle Men podcast. I am Ted, your host, and today I will be talking with Kelsey Jackson, who runs the Motorcycle Trans Am motorcycle event, and she is here to tell us all about it. But first, before we get into that, the Motorcycle Men podcast is brought to you by Scorpion Helmets. Now, they're offering high-quality, innovative motorcycle helmets and technical apparel at an incredible value. So to learn more, visit ScorpionUSA.com. And Wild Ass Seats. You can improve your comfort and ability to stay in the saddle longer with a cushion from Wild Ass Seats. So if you're tired of those painful pressure points and fatigue, go to wild-ass.com and tell them that the Motorcycle Men podcast sent you over and get your cushion today. The real Craig Johnson over there will help you out. And as always, Tobacco Motorwear. For the best in casual riding gear for men and women, there's only one place you should be going, and that is Tobacco Motorwear. Visit them at tobaccomotorwear.com, and our listeners will get 10% off their order when they use the code MOTOMEN. Everyone here at the podcast is wearing tobacco riding jeans. I got the California riding shirt and a whole bunch of other stuff, and I can't tell you how excellent these products are. I wear them for every ride, and I won't ride without them. So your safety is worth it. So head on over to Tobacco Motorwear and get in Dave's pants. And you can also go to the Motorcycle Men website, MotoMen PC, hit the shop page, and you can buy the Tobacco Motorwear products right there. All right, time now for that little interview with Kelsey. Hello, boys and girls, and welcome back. This is episode 446 of the Motorcycle Men podcast. Joining me today, all the way from, where are you located at?
Near Erie, Pennsylvania.
Erie, Pennsylvania. Okay. Kelsey Jackson with the Motorcycle Trans Am event. Is it an event or a race?
It's a little of both. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's a race. There's a winner, but it's not about speed. It's about the age of your bike.
And, all right.
You know?
It's about competing. So why don't you tell us who you are, what you do?
Right. So my name's Kelsey Jackson. I'm the race director and a kind of a little bit of everything else here at the Motorcycle Trans Am. Our full name's the Trans American Motorcycle Endurance Run. This was our first inaugural year. We just got done on September 16th. We just got done and then drove home from Oregon.
Oh, wow. So what exactly is the Motorcycle Trans Am?
Sure. It's a race for 100-year-old and older motorcycles. So anything 1925 and earlier. 1925 is the newest we had. We had a bunch of 1925s. And then our oldest was a 1910 this year, 1910 Thor. So we go across the country over the course of 16 days. We went from the Outer Banks to Florence, Oregon. And we have a different stop each day. There's a different amount of miles each day, mm-hmm. Different elevation each day, and they just have to get to the finish line, basically.
Oh, okay. So what was the inspiration to create the Motorcycle Trans Am? I mean, and how has it changed over the years? I mean, is this the first one you said, right?
This is our first event. There has been other endurance events in the past. I'm sure that everyone has heard of the Motorcycle Cannonball.
Yes, yes.
That was started by Lonnie Ism Jr., who we also have an antique motorcycle parts company called Competition Distributing.
Okay.
And Lonnie was a part of getting that started with his dad, and he started the Motorcycle Cannonball, and not mentioning him would be a travesty to the sport because, he had that view in the early 2000s. 2010, I believe, was the first Motorcycle Cannonball. So that kind of has fallen off. Lonnie passed, and we didn't want to see the sport die because we've done those. And we're extremely passionate about it. So we want to continue the sport on, and we love doing it. We love the bikes. We love the camaraderie, kind of everything about it.
Okay. Wow. Now, do you say that this is for motorcycles 100 years old or older?
Yes.
Right. Now, what's the oldest bike you had? You said it was a 2010. What's some of the unique brands that you may have had in this race?
Yeah, so that 1910 was a Thor, so that's pretty unique.
Yeah.
That didn't make all the miles, but she made all the miles she could, and it was an awesome bike. And we have, you know, Henderson's. Obviously, Harley is the most popular. We have Indians, Henderson's. We had an Ace, Excelsior, which is basically a Henderson.
Right.
So, yeah, that kind of rounds up all of them. But, yeah, a little bit of everything.
Wow. Now, let's talk about the route. 4,000 miles from Nag's Head, North Carolina, to Hasita Head Lighthouse in Oregon.
Yeah.
Right? Why was that route chosen? Or how much work went into creating that route?
The route is a huge undertaking. It's bigger than you could ever expect it. It was bigger than, you know, what we expected, but that's all right. We got it figured out. So the first, you know, cannonball that Lonnie dreamt up started from that area, not exactly there, but that area. And we kind of wanted to, you know, tip our hats to Lonnie and kind of take it in. It's sort of the same route, but we just kind of put our own spin on it. And we had some stops that we wanted to do, you know, of course, Wheels Through Time is really awesome. We wanted to do the Twisted Oz, and there was a Aviation and Space Museum we really wanted to do out on the West Coast. So yeah, we had some stops that we knew we wanted to hit, and just kind of figuring it out in between and how many miles these bikes can go each day.
Right. Now, as far as it goes for that route, I assume that there are no interstate highways involved at all.
No, absolutely not. That would be extremely dangerous.
Yeah, of course.
The 1910 goes like 32 consistently. So
wow. Oh, wow. Really? Now, as far as it goes for the stops along the way, you mentioned some of the museums and things like that. What are some of those places that the event stopped at?
So we stopped, our first stop ever, you know, our first inaugural stop was at Apex, North Carolina, which is like a suburb of Raleigh. The city, like I work with each city, and, you know, we meet many, many times and figure it out where we're going to go. Like we went to the town hall for that one. The next stop was a motorcycle shop called Westside Twins in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. That was a cool one, and it was perfect timing because that day we had like 3 broken frames and they had a welder and we needed that welder badly.
Wow. Wow. Really? I understand that one of your stops was actually the Wheels Through Time Museum. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the next stop after that was Wheels Through Time, which we love. And, you know, Matt does an awesome job. Chris does an awesome job. We love going there. So if we can make a stop there, we're going to make a stop there.
Now, are these stops at the end of the day or just during the day ride?
They're at the end of the day. They're the finish line. So, okay. You know, we want people to be there and cheering on these guys as they ride in, which there's a huge time from when the first bike comes into the last bike because we have, you know, 4 cylinders. We have a whole pack of 4 cylinders. They call themselves a wolf pack.
Uh-huh.
They're awesome. But they come in. They almost beat me there. They're going like 60 miles an hour. I'm like, you guys have to slow down.
You know, you don't imagine a motorcycle 100 years old going that fast.
Yeah, the 4 cylinders are amazing. And then we have a single cylinder, so who are also incredibly amazing, but they're much slower. So, you know, we got a 2-hour, 3-hour wait till they get there after the 4s get there.
Wow. So what time are the riders starting in the morning?
We pretty much started at 7 every morning.
Really? And what time are they arriving at the destination for the end of the day?
Anywhere from like 2. I mean, some of the shorter days, it was like 1 for the faster bikes.
Okay.
Anywhere from like 2 to 4 usually. Oh,
okay. So it's not that. It's not horrible.
No. It's like, it goes from like, so our shortest day was in North Carolina. It was like 186 miles or something. And then the longest day was 360, which was a serious challenge. And people put 13 hours of seat time in that day.
Really? And where was that?
That was in Washington.
No kidding. In Washington. See, I would have expected it to be something like, you know, Kansas or somewhere in the middle of nowhere, you know?
Yeah, that was Oregon State. Sorry, I had Washington on my mind. No, Oregon State, which, Oregon. You know, okay. You were right on the line there. But there is, Eastern Oregon is just incredibly sparse.
Really?
It was like nothing. No towns, no gas stations. They had to go 105 miles with no gas in Oregon.
I wonder what kind of range those bikes have.
So some of them, so like we had a sidecar bike, a 1925 Harley JD sidecar bike with his daughter was riding with him. So that was a lot of, you know, they were sucking fuel. They were going like 40 max.
Right. Wow.
Okay. So they have to carry, everybody carries their own fuel. So I would say usually it's like 60 miles for most of these J models. But you know, that varies. A lot of them don't risk it past like 40, 50.
Oh, wow. Do any of the riders, like, were there any challenges daily for some of the riders?
Oh, there's challenges daily for, I would say, almost all of them.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the crack frame is, like, pretty crazy. That doesn't happen every day. Like, that happened, let's see, that one day we had three, and then there was a motor mount a couple times. But we didn't really have any more crack frames, thank God, after that. Which was crazy because some of those roads were horrible.
Oh, I can only imagine. All back roads, right?
Yeah, yeah. So they had, you know, disappeared the road since we had ridden the route last. Like, it was, the one road was just gone. The construction had just, like, completely, it was open still, but there was,
there was no pavement?
Like, no, there was nothing. It was just like.
Well, were there, on that subject, though, but were there dirt roads involved?
Other than that, so that one was super unexpected.
Oh, and that okay.
was 2 miles. And then other than that, we knew about one in North Carolina, Western North Carolina, where they had all that flooding last year.
Right, right.
But it was only like 600 feet or something. So like,
oh, that's you know, nothing. That's nothing.
No, no. Yeah. So other than that, no, we don't really put them on dirt.
How do the riders prepare for this kind of event with the physical demands and the mechanical things and just the long distance endurance of something like this on a 100-year-old bike?
Yeah. I mean, physically, so a lot of the people who ride are older. So they do like have to prepare and kind of like get their body ready, you know, by riding like a bicycle or just, you know, making sure they're the right weight. Some of them, you know, go on a diet or whatever. Cause these bikes are very physically demanding. I mean, they're exhausted by the end of the day. So,
imagine.
You know, they do that. And then to even prepare, you know, otherwise, it's a lot of mechanical preparing and testing your bike for a year beforehand.
Really?
And, oh, I need to do this with the carb, or I need to switch the carb, or I need to, there's just so much, just take the whole motor apart again, blow it apart again and redo it. Which happens on the road sometimes at night. That happens. They will rebuild their entire bottom end.
Oh my God. Wow. Man, that's something you don't want to do on the side of the road.
Yeah. Oh, and let's see, we had one guy who, he wasn't expecting this, obviously. His rod cracked. So he had somebody go to his shop in New York, get a rod, fly it in on an airplane, like a red eye to us. They got it at like 11, and they had it fixed for the start the next morning without any sleep, of course. But
oh wow,
yeah, these Yikes. Guys are, you know, stuff happens that you don't prepare for, and it's like, are you gonna quit or are you gonna keep going? You know, you've been preparing for this for a year, so they'll do whatever it takes to keep going.
Yeah, I can imagine. Oh geez. Well, for the riders, what was the toughest part for the riders? Was there a toughest state? Was there a toughest road? What was it?
So we did Wolf Creek Pass in Colorado there, which a lot of people know. On a 100-year-old bike, it's insane. so that was a really tough day, but I would say they probably had it even tougher on the East Coast in like
really?
The East. Yeah, because we did the Tail of the Dragon too. So to keep, like, two of the bikes didn't have transmissions. They're just single speed. So to keep pulling those hills and those curves on a single speed it's hard. And sometimes they have to push them up a hill half a mile. So I think that those days were actually a little longer than the Rocky, you know, the Rockies days.
Wow. See, I would have never imagined it like that. As far as it goes for your, like, your, was there a scoring system involved, or if it was, or was it just whoever it wrote up first?
They get 1 point per mile. So it doesn't matter who gets in first, okay. You know, first during the day. You just have to make all your miles. It basically, It's by Oldest Bike and then Motor Displacement.
Okay.
So, yeah, most of the same years we had were the 1925s. The rest of them were all different. But it's like if you miss a mile and you have to get picked up by the sweep truck, you're probably not going to win. Somebody is going to make all those miles. So, yeah, you drop down after anything.
Do the riders come up with their own strategies on how they're going to keep going, or is it just start it and go?
I mean, they definitely strategize because they, you know, they'll see what the elevation is going to be and they'll decide, okay, I need to gear down for tomorrow, or I need to gear up, or, you know, I need to lean it out a little bit. Well, they're constantly doing that throughout the day, but, you know, depending on the elevation, because some of them, you know, are different at different elevations.
Well, what was the highest elevation that the event went over?
I think Wolf Creek was the highest. Oh gosh, don't quote me. It's like maybe 10,000 feet.
Really?
Like yeah.
Oh man. No kidding. Oh my gosh, that must have been horrible for those guys.
Yeah, and that's actually the only day. We had rain one other day, but that's the only day we had rain. It was like 37 degrees.
Oh, no.
And they were just going through it. And then it was the mountain pass and, you know, a hairpin turn at the end of the pass there going downhill. It was crazy.
Wow. My gosh, that's crazy. As far as it goes for safety, I mean, I have to imagine there was a lot of safety protocols you guys had to put together for this event so that the riders were safe and all that. Can you give us an insight on that?
So, I mean, as for their bike, they're allowed to upgrade the brakes because of the brakes in, let's say, 1925 were terrible.
yeah, a little bit.
Disc brakes on. You know, there are some upgrades they can do for safety. It's not required. But if anybody asks me, like, yes, upgrade your brakes for sure. Yeah. Not everybody does. You know, most of them carry a fire extinguisher. That's always a risk. We have like an RN that rides the course with us every day.
Oh, really? Oh, there you go. Okay.
Yeah. So luckily he was our useless staff member, and I would love to.
Well, that's a useless staff member you want to have.
That's the only one I wanted. It was great. I didn't want it any other way.
Did the riders have put it this way, was there a favorite part of the ride that the riders really, really liked a lot?
So riding wise, I would say when everyone came in from the Tail of the Dragon.
Oh, really?
They were, I mean, everybody was like so. Everybody was really, it had gotten, so they don't get the maps beforehand. They don't know where they're going.
Oh, really? Oh, that's great. We're going to talk about that some more.
It's a paper map. So they turn it in their road book there. And so they didn't know, but it had gotten leaked. I'm not going to say who. Somebody had leaked that we were doing Tail of Dragon. So at breakfast, everybody's like, we're doing Tail of Dragon. What? So they were all like, I think a little bit nervous. And everybody who tried it did it fine. And, you know, pulled all the hills and,
yeah,
you know, great. We were there pretty early in the morning, so it wasn't that busy yet.
Wow.
But riding wise, I would say that. But otherwise, every night in the pits, that's one of my favorite times because you get to see everybody working on their bikes and like, you know, maybe tearing apart a motor. Everyone has something to do every night, and that's where you see them helping each other out, even though, you know, they're against each other.
Yeah, of course.
They're out and they're having a great time, and they're, you know, so that's kind of one of my favorite parts, and I know that they really like it too, is hanging out with each other.
Oh wow. Did you see anybody not working on their bike because they didn't have to, or was everybody working on their bike?
Pretty much everyone works on their bike, even if they come in and it's just the maintenance, they have at least an hour of work.
Yeah,
like hour or two. Then that's just like the maintenance you have to do every single day.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you won't make it that next day. but yeah, nobody does it. Like, they don't just like go put their bikes away and like, that's it. Like, they have to do something every night. And then sometimes you have to do a lot of things and you're working till 1-2 in the morning.
Oh, no. I can't even imagine. Now let's talk about the mapping. Now, how did they follow the route? What did they have that aided them in following the correct route?
So they get, we keep it secret, so nobody knows. So everybody out there who asks, I get a lot of messages on like Instagram and Facebook, like, oh, we want to like go on the route and see what it is. We can't tell you because we don't tell any of the riders. So there's no chance of cheating or anything.
Right.
Which, you know, wasn't a worry, but just to be safe. So every morning at breakfast at the hotels, they come and they get like this rolled paper mat from us. And they come and they find, we have like the gas stops and like, you know, maybe places of interest if they want to stop and take a picture or something. So they go through it while they're eating their breakfast, like, and they circle what gas stops they want to go to make sure they don't run out of gas. And then they put it in their road book and they like turn it. And
oh, so it's like one of those road book things that they put on the handlebars and they just turn it. Oh, really? Now, is that provided by the event organizers or is that something they have to get on their own?
They have to get that on their own, the okay. actual like, thing. So I send it out beforehand, like, hey, this is the one that you have to get or that'll work with our maps.
Okay.
They like your total mileage on the side. And so, you know, like you have an odometer and you know, okay, I'm at 58.4 at 57.2. I need to turn on the Bob's Road here.
Okay. Yeah. It's like what we used to call and what we still have them in cycling. It's like a cue sheet.
But, oh, okay,
yeah. Starting yeah. point, your starting mileage. And then at mile 3, you're turning here, yada, yada. So that, yeah, okay, that sounds, but this is a little more fancy where it's in the roll. Oh, wow, that's really cool. Wow.
Yeah, a lot of odometers are bicycle odometers that the guys use.
Did any of them break?
Let me think. So if it rains, if you don't have it like taped at the top, it can get wet and then like you're screwed.
Oh, right. Oh no.
But most of them know that to tape that top so the rain can't get in. I didn't hear of anybody's breaking, so I guess that went well at least.
Wow. How do you hope that the riders and the spectators, were there spectators at all?
Yeah, I mean, when we get towards the cities, like obviously at the end, we want there to be spectators. We, you know, working with the cities, we do a lot of digital advertising. We do flyer on businesses advertising in each city.
Really? Okay.
Sometimes I'll be on the radio beforehand or, you know, when we get there, like the TV station will be there or whatever, to try to get more people to come see it. But on the route, since we don't give the route out, it's kind of just like hit or miss.
Okay. All right. So as the finish line, well, you started in Nag's Head, and at the finish line, did you have a crowd there?
There was some people there. There was a motorcycle group of maybe like a dozen that had come out to watch the finish. And then everybody's friends and family, not everybody, a lot of people's friends and family will fly out and then come to the finish line because it is like such an accomplishment for them to make that far. Even if they had to miss a day to work on their bike, it's still like it doesn't matter. You finished.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine. Now, did you have any sponsors for the event?
Yeah, we had a lot of really supportive sponsors. For our first one was incredibly important. We had Legends Motorcycles, who we stopped at their museum too. They're in just outside Salt Lake in Springville.
Okay.
So they were a really big sponsor. Sinless Cycles was a big sponsor. These are all like, you know, the antique guys who want to see this sport keep going.
Sure.
The Antique Motorcycle Club of America, Competition Distributing. And Veritas Vintage. I knew there was another one. He is out of Texas there.
Yeah. Now, these riders, the guys, the people who participated in this ride, are they going to participate again? Or is there a method where somebody who, if they have an old motorcycle, they want to participate in the event? What do they have to do?
So it's open. So we'll cut it at 75 riders, no matter what, you know. Even as we grow, we won't have more than 75 ever. We had about 35 for this first run, which was great. I was very happy with it.
Yeah.
So a lot of these guys will do it again, and they have their spot, you know, saved by me, so they don't have to worry about, oh, I need to hurry up and get in.
Right.
But other than that, it's like just first come, first serve. I actually opened it up to our email list today, this morning. It went out. So we have like 7 new signups already today. So that's exciting.
Oh, so this event is going to take place every year?
Oh, every other year.
Every other year. Okay.
Yes, 2027.
Mm-hmm. So 2027 is the next event, and you have not even started working on the route yet.
We have an idea. We're calling it the Great Northern Crossing.
Okay.
And you're going to go across some northern states, and we have an idea on a start line. And we kind of want to maybe hug the Great Lakes, come near Erie, Pennsylvania, is my hope.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll, so we have a rough idea, a really rough idea, but we'll start getting into that in the next couple of months here.
Wow. Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun. You know, it's like, I wish I had an old bike that I could do that. You know, it's the undertaking alone. Because how long does it take you to put together the route?
So we'll start now. And then, you know, we have to work with each city and make sure, hey, they'll give us the right permits that we need and they're willing to support us and everything. So if we need to switch cities, I don't want to do it last minute.
Right.
So we'll start working with them probably January at the latest.
Now, these are the finishing cities you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the route itself. My husband does that and he did a great job. It is a ton of work. So he'll run it 3 times.
Really? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. So he'll run it 3 times. The first time just to kind of get it roughed in and then, you know, wait 6 months or whatever. And then kind of, okay, we have more exact. So do it. And then one more time, like 3 weeks before the event to make sure there's no construction. And then we have someone that runs ahead of us to make sure there's no new construction that just popped up.
Wow. And in that event, I guess you do like a last minute route change.
Yeah. Yeah. I would send out a group text if it was later in the day. Yeah. This next time we'll probably have them write it on their maps, but luckily we only had one like serious route change. So, you know, what could come up in the 3 weeks beforehand?
Yeah. Oh, geez. What does as an event organizer, what do you guys take care of for the riders for the event, as far as with regard to meals and lodging and things like that?
Yeah, so we gave them and their crews dinner every night. So a lot of times the cities will help us or the stops will help us with that.
Okay.
Lunch, they're kind of on their own because we want them, if some of them don't want to stop for lunch, some of them, my dog is chewing on a wire. Okay.
That would be bad.
So some of them want to stop to take pictures, to see sights, whatever. We had an Italian team and they love stopping to see literally everything. So they like to take their time and get in there later. So yeah, we don't do anything for lunch stops. There's no required stops throughout the day. We just want them to get from A to B.
Mm-hmm.
As fast or as slow as, well, not as slow as they want. It's, you know, a certain time limit, but
sure.
You know, you can't have these old bikes running after dark. That is not safe.
I'd imagine not.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know where I was going with that. I was going somewhere.
Well, that's okay. Cause I was asking you about what does the event organizers take care of for riders?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So so they pay for their hotels, but I take care of getting their hotels and, you know, working. So when they get there, all they have to do, it's not a huge line. They just go grab their key, kind of working on that. We all stay in 1 or 2 hotels each night. I think we only had to split to 3 hotels once because most people have a truck and trailer. So we do have to take into account parking lot size. That's a big thing.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah, so we can't just stay at any hotel, so I have to really search on Google Maps, and then as Sean rides the route, he'll check it out for me and say yes or no.
Okay. So because that brings up another question I had. I was under the impression that everybody would just get on their bike and ride to the West Coast, and then what happens then? How do they get home? You know, are they riding? Are they shipping? But based on what you just said, it sounds to me like somebody's following them in a car with a trailer or a truck and a trailer.
Yeah, not on the route. So we don't want the support teams on the route because it's just during the day, it's just them and their bike,
right,
or, you know, their team and their bike. But they go to the stop and then they'll wait. They'll get set up with all the tools and everything, get ready for them to come in. And then we do have a sweet van and trailer. So anybody who breaks down and can't fix it gets on the, you know, gets in the.
Oh, that's a bummer. Yeah. You didn't have that this year though, right?
Oh, we did. Yeah.
You did?
Yeah. Every day, you know, these are 100-year-old machines. They're finicky and they're, you know, they break easily. And that's okay. Cause they'll just go to that next stop. They'll miss, they'll just get the points for however many miles they did. They go to the next stop, they work on their bike, and then they get back out there the next day.
Oh, geez. Okay. Wow. That must, you know, what a bummer that must be for somebody who planned for this and then they get out there and then the bike breaks down on them. You know, that's.
Yeah. It's a real disappointment. You know, a lot of people, they put a lot. I mean, it is an insane amount of work to get these bikes ready.
Oh, sure.
At this far. So it is a real bummer when they break down. But most of them, you know, they don't give up. They keep going. And okay, I missed the miles. I can't win, but I can still make more miles. So
right now, anybody who had that situation where their bike broke down completely, do they continue on the route or do they just go home?
Most of them continue on the route. So they'll go to the hotel. They'll work on their bike. They might have to rebuild the whole thing.
Right.
Our team, Kat and Keo, they're from Los Angeles. She was riding that 1910 Thor, and he was riding, husband and wife, he was riding a 1919 Excelsior. His bike, they just couldn't get dialed. He sent it, he overnighted it to like a machinist to work on one of the cylinders. They overnighted it back like 3 days later or whatever. And now something else is wrong with the cylinder, not the original thing, cracked whatever that they didn't know about.
Yeah.
So it's like he couldn't keep going on that bike, but he kept going with her bike and trash. So she made all the miles that she possibly could. You know, she got over 1,000 miles, which is great.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Some problems with the East Coast, but once we got out west, it was a little better. So he couldn't, unfortunately, but he did the 360-mile day on her single, which no, you don't get points for, but he wanted to do it, which was awesome. So he only took 2 5-minute breaks for 360 miles over the course of 13 hours.
Oh man.
Crazy.
I have to imagine though that in this an event like this, that you get this new community of antique motorcycle enthusiasts. You know that how much awareness or how much interest did you get from at your destinations each day? Did people who weren't participating develop an interest in maybe wanting to get involved in this?
Yeah, I mean. Sure, there's definitely an interest and people love it and wish they could do it. It's a huge time commitment. It's a huge money commitment, of course.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So, you know, not everybody can do it. So we really appreciate people who come out and just, you know, they want to see it. But we do get some new people who they were thinking about getting antique bikes and like, oh, well, maybe I'm going to get into it. So I think we got like maybe a few new people for this race.
Oh, great.
This next race. I think we did. So we'll see.
That's excellent. So yeah. How can people learn more about the Motorcycle Trans Am?
Yeah. So they could go to our website, motorcycletransam.com, or our socials. We keep updated almost every day.
Okay.
Our email newsletter is kind of where I really put everything. So if they sign up for that, they will definitely see everything. That goes out weekly for the most part, unless it's like Christmas or something. Our socials, website, email. I would say those three places, and you're going to know everything.
Okay, great. Any closing words about the event, and if riders want to get involved, what they have to do?
Yeah, so, I mean, if you didn't follow us, you should start following us if you're not sure what it's all about. We have a ton of videos, a ton of photos. You know, we had a great staff come with us, a ton of photographers. So check those out, and just know what you're getting into, because it is not easy and it's not for the faint of heart, but it is fun and it's rewarding. And everybody, every night has a smile on their face, even if they cracked their frame.
I can imagine. Well, speaking of the sign up thing, what does somebody have to do if they want to sign up for the event?
Right. It's not on our website yet because I give our email list first dibs for the first like 2 days. But in the next few days here, so let's say by October 10th, they can go to our website and hit the registration button.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Well, Kelsey, I want to thank you very much for being here and telling us all about the Motorcycle Trans Am. It sounds like a really wonderful event, and I'm glad there is something like this for the older bikes that are out there. Again, yeah, really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate you caring enough to, you know, talk to me about it.
Thank you. Well, again, don't go anywhere. I want to talk to you when we're done, but thank you very much for being on the show.
All right. Thank you.
The Motorcycle Men Podcast is supporting David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. If you would like to help and be a part of something that actually makes a difference, donate today to David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. Go to davidsdreamandbelieve.org to donate. Links will also be in the show notes. And the Gold Star Ride Foundation helps families of fallen soldiers and makes a difference in the lives of those left behind. So if you'd like to be a part of a great cause and get some heartfelt miles in, go to goldstarride.org and learn how you can participate in the next Gold Star Ride. Hey, thanks for joining me and Kelsey here in the V-Twin Cafe, where she told us all about the Motorcycle Trans Am. Sounds like a wonderful event, and if you have a 100-year-old motorcycle, this is what you should be doing. Now, you can learn more about the event by getting on over to MotorcycleTransAm.com. Links will be in the show notes and, of course, on the Motorcycle Men website at motomenpc.com. And don't forget to get on over to the Ride with Ted YouTube channel. Watch some of the many videos I have there. And if you'd please also like and subscribe, that would be a tremendous help to the channel and, of course, to the podcast. Hey, get your copy of my book, The Road Most Traveled Now, direct from me on the Motorcycle Men website and save nearly $8. Of course, it's still available on Amazon and on Audible if you want the audiobook version, but you can get it from me if you want, and I'll even sign it for you if you'd like. All right, kids, for the rest of the Motorcycle Men team, thanks for listening, and remember, we say stupid crap so you don't have to. Ride safely, kids.